Welcome to the All Souls Forum on KKFI. Tonight's show features City Manager Troy Schulte. That's the Kansas City City Manager. He's going to talk to us about taxes and development in Kansas City. We're going to have a brief introduction, and then we'll hear from Mr. Schulte, and then we'll take a short break after the talk, and then we'll come back with our question and answer session as usual. This program was recorded on Sunday, September 29th of 2013 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. And without further ado, let us begin.
Troy Schulte received his bachelor's degree in economics and history from Iowa State University and a master's degree in economics from Iowa State University, as well as a master's degree in economics from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Mr. Schulte has been with the city since 1998. He was named the city's budget officer in 2003. He was appointed acting city manager in November of 2010. Mr. Schulte was appointed to his current position of city manager in May of 2011. This morning's topic is taxes and development in Kansas City. Many of our major cities are dealing with problems of solvency, how to attain and maintain it while sustaining economic growth. Mr. Schulte will be discussing tax incentives, deferred taxes, and other issues related to development occurring now and in the near future in Kansas City. Please help me welcome Mr. Troy Schulte.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here on a gorgeous Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning. I'm already anticipating a football game this afternoon. My speech was a little bit about taxes and economic and community development. And I will touch on that. I'll keep it rather informal. I hopefully won't break any ground. If you're a reader of the newspaper, you'll probably have read a lot of these strategies. We've been talking about them at City Hall and in the Economic Development Corporation and in the community for a number of times as we've tried to come back with a comprehensive strategy, not only to deal with the ongoing issues with our competition with the state of Kansas for job attraction, but also how do we do community development in the 21st century? How do we attract young people to the community, and how do we grow the city as we move forward? So, first off, I'm a firm believer that Kansas City is a city on the rise. There's a growing sense of pride, I think, in the community. I think Mayor James has had a tremendous amount to do with that. I think there's a sense of optimism. We've hosted both the Major League Baseball All-Star Game and the Major League Soccer All-Star Game. So we've had two All-Star Games in the last 2 years. Google Fiber, while tearing up the town, has really generated a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of interest in our technology sector. And I think that's, and it's brought us a lot of national and international recognition. I grumble about the torn-up streets and the metal plates, but that's the price of progress. You've seen a rebirth in our downtown. We got ranked as one of the top 10 downtowns in the country. We've gone through a lot of fits and starts with that over the years. We've had the budget issues as it didn't perform originally as projected, but it has changed the nature of the conversation around downtown. So as we move forward, I think there's a lot to deal with that will make it that much more of an incubator and an attractor for economic development in the community. You're seeing the rise, as I mentioned, with Google Fiber, the city's tech center in Crossroads. There's going to be an announcement in the next couple of weeks about a project by Sprint, one of their health accelerators to using technology. You're seeing Cerner make its investment in the community. A lot of startup high-tech issues, startup village along state line between KCK and KCMO. So there's a lot of energy around the tech center right now. And I think you're seeing that sense of pride go forward. A few years ago, conversations about hosting the Republican National Convention in Kansas City would have been poo-pooed and said, we can't do it. I think now there's a sense that we can accomplish that, set that out. That's about a $200 to $250 million economic impact. Say what you will about Republicans, but the last time I checked, they spend green dollars just like everybody else. So we want to try to figure out a way to get them into downtown and, again, continue that elevation of the conversation around Kansas City. So I think those are kind of the framework. So I think it's a very positive basis that we've got to work with in Kansas City, and I think it's how do we continue to build that momentum and move forward.
But the city is at risk in the sense, and it shouldn't come to surprise at you, is that the state of Kansas is our biggest risk to the city's growth. If you look at it from a historical perspective and you look at it from a fundamental economic perspective, the state of Kansas is dependent on growth in Johnson County to fuel its state operations. You've got the issues with agriculture in western Kansas. You've got a sluggish aerospace industry in Wichita. If you look at the data, Johnson County has been the driving force for the state of Kansas growth for a number of years. I don't see any change in that environment going forward. So Kansas's efforts to recruit industry and businesses, both in their tax reform and in their economic incentives, I think are going to continue. I think talk of detente or talk of disarmament, while good to hear, I don't see that happening anytime soon, just because I think Kansas needs growth in Johnson County to continue to provide services. It will be interesting to watch their investment in tax reform to see if that works. They don't have the energy sector that is thriving in other states like Texas, which they're quick to compare to. So it will be interesting to see how that works long term. And I think we from a Missouri side and from a Kansas City side need to continue to just watch that environment, not react immediately to those issues, but watch to see what functions work, if that tax reform, the tax cuts in Kansas have the desired benefit. But my sense is we're going to be in this border war battle for a number of years. And how do we just continue to deal with it? And one of those issues is how do we compete in that environment? And my sense is we don't necessarily have to compete. We have to be able to hold our own. We have roughly 27,000 businesses located within Kansas City, Missouri. We've got a fairly strong business base. One of the things we have to do is kind of take care of our own. And we have to utilize the incentives that we have in Missouri, whether it's Missouri Quality Jobs or a new Missouri Works program that the state passed just at the end of last legislative session that allows us to offer some state retention money. But one thing we found is we do not have to match Kansas dollar for dollar. One of the things that makes us attractive, one of the things I think we have to capitalize on, is our ability that we have the amenities, the physical environment that makes us attractive for businesses to locate. We're about four blocks from the highest lease rates in the metropolitan area in the Country Club Plaza. So that is still the most attractive place in the region to be. We have to be aggressive in making sure that infrastructure stays attractive, but we don't have to compete on a dollar for dollar basis with the state of Kansas, because we've got inherently attractive environment. It was an interesting conversation about 2 years ago when Posenelli was looking at both sides, and they had a very attractive offer from the state of Kansas to relocate their facilities to that Mission Mall, the Mission Gateway project. It was very easy. I can remember the mayor saying, he says, well, you've got an option. You can take the Kansas money and look over a brand new Arby's on Johnson Drive, or you can look at the Country Club Plaza. And that's a very compelling argument. It moves to our strengths. It allows us to say, you know, we've got something that nobody else in the region has, or very few other places in the country have. Let's build to our strengths. Let's build to our capacity. And I think that's the issue that we got. And I've called it what I call that communities of choice. And that's what we need to build on as we move forward. You know, I think one of those areas that are attractive to business development, I've mentioned the plaza. I mentioned the crossroads. The crossroads was rather an organic development. It kind of came out of the artistic community started to make investments in there, but now you're starting to see the tech sector. The arts community continues to thrive in there. You're seeing a lot of small business startups, entrepreneurial efforts coming not only in the city market but in the crossroads area as well. The city has to do just a job of making sure the infrastructure works, the graffiti issues are abated, and let that natural organic growth continue to grow and prosper. I think you're seeing an emergence of downtown as an attractive place. We've located some companies that are attracting, especially some of our the app developers for the smartphones, want to be in the neighborhood to attract those millennials that are good at doing whatever those folks do to build those little things that I use or can't understand and have to rely on my 12-year-old to figure out how they work. But it allows us, I think, that ability to market to those unique niches that says we can provide, if you're interested in a business environment that has a 24/7 environment. One of the issues that we deal with quite often now is that clash of cultures. We've got an up-and-coming, thriving residential community downtown. We still have the entertainment district, and now we've got that clash of cultures. So that's what other big cities have dealt with for years. It's kind of a new phenomenon for Kansas City to work through. And I think it's one of those issues that I think we're going to continue to wrestle with as we go forward, is how do we find that balance between both commercial growth and residential growth in those key areas of the city. But that's a great problem to be having from a city perspective, because in the past, I always tell this story, and it was good to see my former next-door neighbors were here. I used to ride the bus to work when I first moved to Kansas City, and there was a time I could not make change for a $5 bill in downtown Kansas City at 5:15 in the evening. There was nothing open. You look at that, and that's been less than 15 years ago we had that problem. So we've come a long ways as a city. Now we need to just continue to capitalize on it, but use that strength, use those in public investments as catalysts for future development. And, again, not over-incent. Don't sell ourselves short. Don't panic when we've got a job, both a job and attraction or a job retention issue at stake, because what we have found and what we need to continue to work on is that we've got an attractive environment. People want to be in Kansas City, Missouri, and we need to figure out a way to bring them to Kansas City, Missouri without overpaying for that privilege. It's interesting to watch, and you could tell some of the companies that are serious about doing it and some of the companies that are interested in it from just they're going to chase those incentives. I have seen companies in my tenure with the city that have moved to Kansas, signed 10-year leases. The incentives expired in 10 years. Guess who's looking for lease space back in Kansas City, Missouri? It's those same companies. So we have to just be prepared to realize that if we try to chase every deal in what is essentially a regional real estate market, a regional office market, we will not win every deal. I think it's interesting. I think Bill Hall at the Hall Family Foundation has been tracking this, and he says there's been about a 500 net job movement from Missouri to Kansas over the last decade. So we've spent a lot of money on both sides of the state line moving jobs back and forth with no net real impact other than maybe changing where people turn from a traffic signal standpoint. But it's an issue that I think we have to be cognizant of going forward. I don't see Kansas moving away from that strategy anytime soon, but we have to just be prepared to be able to make strategic investments, retain the companies that we think we need to retain that are important from a strategic standpoint, whether it be technology companies, whether it be healthcare companies, whether it be architectural and engineering companies that I think help us co-locate those other issues, create an environment that is attractive to entrepreneurs. I saw an interesting story the other day where entrepreneurialism rises in correlation with the amount of layoffs at Sprint, which is an interesting way to look at it, that as Sprint downsizes, that creates opportunities in the region for entrepreneurs to come out of that tech industry. So I thought it was an interesting way of looking at what has been perceived as a bad thing for the region. Actually, there's a bit of a silver lining to that dark cloud, as when doors close, other windows open, and we need to be, as a city, aggressive in incubating those types of opportunities, presenting those opportunities for people to start their own businesses, providing them access to capital, making it easy to do business with in the city. The last thing I think is probably our most important aspect, and it's kind of one of our what I would say our hidden jewels. When we think about business development in Kansas City, we normally think of the plaza, we think of the crossroads, we think of downtown, we think of our I-435 corridor. But one of the things, when you go back and you look historically at Kansas City, the importance of neighborhoods as incubators for those issues. If I had a dollar in my municipal budget for every dollar that was created in the basements in Brookside in this city, historically, you look at American Century, H&R Block, Boulevard Beer, Roastery, Marion Labs, Cerner started on a picnic table in Luce Park. Those are tremendous assets that we don't sometimes think about, is that the quality of our neighborhoods, whether it be South Moreland, whether it be Ward Parkway, whether it be Brookside, Waldo, whether it be some of our East Side neighborhoods that fostered Negro Leagues baseball, fostered jazz, and are still very viable housing stocks. I'd encourage you, if you're ever out and about on a Sunday afternoon or a Saturday afternoon, to drive through the Santa Fe neighborhood, which is at about 28th and Prospect, 29th and Prospect, and imagine those homes picked up and dropped at, say, 45th and Warwick or 63rd and Brookside, and see what the impact those same homes would have if they were located in other parts of the community. Those are beautiful homes, many of which have been vacant for 30 and 40 years, but are still rock solid and are phenomenal assets on the East Side. One of the investments about trying to change the nature of conversation about Prospect and the city's investment in its new East Patrol facility at 27th and Prospect was to change the nature of the conversation surrounding those very quality neighborhoods that have been perceived as being in the wrong place for too many years. So I think we've got a tremendous opportunity as we move forward to reclaim some of our historically disadvantaged neighborhoods and make them strategic assets going forward. I take great pride in the fact that we are building and selling $300,000 speculative homes in Beacon Hill, east of Troost, and it's a hot market. They get the views of downtown. They get the proximity to whether it's Hospital Hill or downtown or the crossroads, and they get it in an otherwise area that we have struggled for years to get going around here, and it shows that there's a vitality, there's an interest in our urban core neighborhoods that we need to capitalize on, and I think in the long run, that vitality will generate jobs, will generate business, will generate more investment in the city. So we've kind of got a balanced approach as we go forward. You look at other areas of the city. Independence Avenue in Old Northeast is a tremendous small business incubator. One of the issues that we wrestle with is we have a lot of, whether it be Somali or Sudanese or Mexican or Hispanic operators will start small restaurants, immediately gain some traction, and relocate to Johnson County. What we need to do as a city is try to find ways to make them attractive so that they stay on the avenue, so that they stay on Southwest Boulevard, they stay in that area and foster that growth. And so some of the efforts that you're seeing out of Old Northeast and Independence Avenue from a kind of doing an international marketplace approach, we think will pay huge dividends. Again, change the nature of the conversation about Independence Avenue as one, an area we wanted to avoid after sundown, to an area where there is a lot of a thriving restaurant, quality housing in that environment. And I think they're close to having some of those issues beginning to be addressed. I believe that Independence Avenue Commercial Improvement District that was just established in the last couple of months, I think we'll go a long ways into encouraging street life. And then our goal as a city is, from those entrepreneurs, is just figure out a way to keep them thriving and starting those businesses and make that another regional and national draw, that when you come to Kansas City, you not only go to the plaza, but you ride up to have a great ethnic food along Independence Avenue. And I think that's a conversation starter that starts to reinvigorate that whole northeast part of the city, which is a truly phenomenal corridor where you got a lot of small business, retail mom and pop shops, one next door. It's not uncommon to walk along Independence Avenue and find a Sudanese restaurant backed by next to a Vietnamese owned jewelry store. Really a clash of cultures, a cosmopolitan environment right in the middle of Kansas City, and I think it behooves the city to continue to move those efforts forward, let that organic development accrue, and I think in the long run that will add to the tax base and will provide development opportunities for the city. You're starting to see South Kansas City, that 435 corridor, as I mentioned. Most of our economic development attraction deals that have come from Kansas have located along that 435 corridor. You're seeing the life sciences corridor, whether it's the Cerner announcement at the old Bannister Mall, which was talk about a transformative project to put 12 to 15,000 jobs over the next decade into that area, How does the city respond? How do we get people from the urban core neighborhoods out to those jobs so that they don't continue to see the job growth, the housing growth, the population that take those jobs be car dependent? We've got to align our transit structures. We've got to do a lot of those issues to make sure that it's easy, set up networks in schools so that there's job training programs, whether it's out of the community colleges, the universities, but the high school. And you're seeing some conversations starting to take place with Hickman Mills and those areas as they try to adapt to that tremendous job creator. You've got Jim Stowers Jr., I think, has got an interesting idea to create his Oxford on the Blue, which is at 87th and 435, controls all of that area back in there. Has always envisioned that to be a life sciences campus, a place to expand and build off of the Stowers Institute down in the plaza. And I think we just, as a city, continue to have to be supportive of those efforts, make the necessary infrastructure investments. I grumbled a few years ago when I saw us build 87th Street from Bruce R. Watkins over to 435. I said, what in the world are we building this road out here for when there's so many other demands on us as a city, whether it's rebuilding infrastructure in the core or some of our pronounced areas? But it's had a tremendous impact. It's changed the nature of the conversation. And I think the city needs to continue to be aggressive in identifying those opportunities, making the investment on the front end, and then working with our developers and and our civic community into building that. Whether anything comes of that is to be seen, but it's obviously a huge development, a huge opportunity for job creation, new businesses that has been talked about, that hasn't been talked about in Kansas City for a long time. And again, that's one of the issues that I think we need to continue to capitalize on when those opportunities present themselves. How do we capitalize on those strengths? And I think I've mentioned them to you. We have to continue to invest in our infrastructure. We have to fix the sewers. We're doing that. We have to fix the water lines. We're doing that. I have a little section of pipe that was taken out of the city market 2 years ago with a date stamp on it of 1869. We have woods and sewers in Kansas City. We still use them. They still work, but, you know, at some point they're not. And we've got to start to replace those. And that's, unfortunately, that means everybody's water and sewer bills are going to rise, but we have neglected our infrastructure for too long. Last year we had 1,800 water main breaks in a 2,800-mile system. Most utilities measure their water main breaks in the concepts of breaks per 100 miles of line. I'm measuring my in breaks per mile of line. So this year you started to see that investment, and we're tearing up a good chunk of Brookside. We're tearing up a good part of the infrastructure as we replace some of this infrastructure as we go forward. But it's one of those things that's long since delayed, won't get any cheaper to address going forward, but it's one of those, I think, critical investments. We get a lot of grief about the subsidy we need for downtown Kansas City for the Power and Light District. But that, of that $300 million public funds, $200 million went into public infrastructure, whether it was new streets, new parking garages, new sidewalks, those types of issues, all new utility lines down there. So we have managed to make an investment back into those baseline issues going forward. Street repairs, we're doing more in streets this year than we've done in a long, long time, and the credit goes to you for your approval on the park sales tax a year ago that allowed us to make some investments in streets. We need to continue that momentum. Wernal Road was an example of a street reconstruction project south of 75th down to Ward Parkway. Now we've got to do the hard part and reconstruct Wernal Road north of 75th before it slides into the Brush Creek. So we've got a lot of work to do in Kansas City. And when it comes to our infrastructure, a big city, 6,500 lane miles of streets. I always tell the example when other people complain, when I get compared to Gladstone from their snow removal processes, I say, well, I have to plow a two-lane highway from San Diego to Boston every time we get 2 inches of snow. So we have got to address the scale of our city and have to make the investments in our infrastructure if we're going to be competitive long-term. We've started to see that investment. I appreciate the residents and the taxpayers of the city stepping up and approving those ballot initiatives because they're not cheap, whether it's sewer bonds, whether it's water bonds, whether it's sales taxes that we've done in the past year. You guys have been tremendous. I think the streetcar conversation is not so much about transit as it is about economic development and driving density. And how do we continue to do that? And I think there's some conversations not only with the downtown line, but where do we go next, whether it's out Independence Avenue, whether it's out 18th Street, whether it's down Main Street to UMKC in the plaza. But that's how do we drive density into this area, continue to make it attractive. What we find with millennials, if you do the research for the folks in their 20s coming out of college or high school, they're more interested in the latest smartphone device than they are in cars. I can tell you that's a fundamental change from when I was a kid, because I wanted to have a car. I started harping on my dad when I was 14. He ignored me until I was 18. So those are the types of issues that I think we have to continue to do that. I mentioned continuing to rebuild our neighborhoods. I don't know if anybody knows it. I think the Star kind of touched on it today in the editorial. We have over $200 million in public and private investment occurring east of Troost Avenue right this minute. New construction going on in an area that historically has been perceived as abandoned or ignored or allowed to dilapidate. There is phenomenal work going on, whether it's Ollie Gates' project at Emmanuel Cleaver and Troost, where he's rebuilt that entire intersection, has changed the nature of the conversation just a few blocks away, to the student housing project in Beacon Hill. We've got over $50 million of work in the Vineyard area just south of the VA Medical Center. Where it's new housing, converting schools, veterans housing, those types of opportunities. There's a tremendous amount of work going on in the 3rd and 5th Council Manic districts, which have been our areas that have been ignored for too long. And I think we need to continue to enable that. We're doing a targeted demolition program where we wipe out dangerous buildings or dilapidated housing to kind of stabilize those neighborhoods. Our other approach, I think, that works long-term for us, and it's a phrase that my dad used for a number of years, and I still use it, is we got to dance with the ones who brung you. And that's, again, a focusing on our 27,000 existing businesses. We surveyed them last year to ask them what they needed from the city, what their impediments were. I got some interesting results. We're going to come back and see this year. I think that survey is going out as we speak, asking our residents, asking our businesses what are their needs are, whether it be workforce development, whether it be infrastructure, whether it be city services, and what can we do to make it easier for them to do business in Kansas City. We need to simplify their interactions with the city. I'm a big firm believer that if you need a permit from the city, you ought to be able to do that at 3 a.m. in the morning, sitting in your underwear at your kitchen table, and that should be the only interaction you'd ever have to deal with the city government. You shouldn't have to drive down to City Hall to deal with those issues. So we're making the technology investment that allow us to do all of this stuff remotely using technology, using the Internet. We've got a BizCare program that allows, if you're a startup business, that you can just walk in and someone will physically walk you through the process. You're assigned a project manager. They'll walk you through the permitting process. They'll walk you through whether you need small business administration assistance, whether you need help with a restaurant inspection, whatever you have, we'll walk you through that process. That's paying huge dividends. Lastly, I think the biggest thing we can do is just simply say thank you. And we're actually preparing a letter right now that the mayor and I will be signing that will go out to our 27,000 businesses to just say thank you for making the investment in Kansas City. You've got a partner at City Hall. We're here to help long term. I tell a story about a few years ago. We were a business retention issue, and we said, what can the city do to help? And it was in northeast Kansas City, and they were like, well, we've got a really problem with kind of our access road onto 210 highway. It's got a lot of potholes in it. For a dump truck load of asphalt, about $400 worth of asphalt, we saved 160 jobs at about $75,000 apiece. I'd make that investment every day of the week if that would take to make those companies happen. And now they are not only thriving, but they're expanding, and they're adding new jobs because they like that location. So that's the best use of asphalt we've done in a long time in Kansas City. I think the other thing that we have to continue to do is, as I mentioned, was kind of focus our expansion and our recruitment strategies in our key sectors, agriculture. I'm I'm a farmer. I come from a farming family. My family's been in the farming business for 143 years. We were homesteaders back in the 1870s up in Iowa. And this town, for whatever reason, ran from its agricultural heritage for many years. We need to, I think, embrace that potential, that opportunity to become a leading sector again in the agricultural community. You're seeing that in our animal sciences initiative that's coming out of the Area Development Council and the Chamber of Commerce. That's kind of playing to our strong points, playing to our Midwest roots, our capacity. I'm a firm believer there's nothing wrong with being a cow town because there's good money in agriculture right now, and we need to be in a position where we can take advantage of that. I've mentioned our life sciences approach, our arts and our technology, but also our transportation and logistics. Depending on how you count it, we're either the first or the second largest rail hub in the United States. And it's a debate on how you count it with Chicago. We need to capitalize on that transportation and logistics strength, whether it's three and maybe four, depending on how you count Interstate 49. We've got tremendous highway systems. We've got tremendous rail systems. We're putting in barge traffic again on the Missouri River. We need to use KCI more from an air cargo capacity. Those issues going long term. That shouldn't surprise anything. The other thing we've got is architectural and engineering services. We're still in engineering capital and in architectural services capital. We need to capitalize on it. Again, those aren't rocket science issues. Those are what you probably have heard talk about in our advanced KC initiatives that really talk about just if we're going to focus our efforts, focus our sectors, where do we do it? Where do we get the most bang for a buck? And you build off of your strength, you build off your capacity. And I think that will pay dividends long term if we just continue to build off of our strengths, work to acquire new industries, new technologies that drive those issues as we move forward. So I think, again, Kansas City's well positioned. That doesn't mean we can just sit back and just wait for all this stuff to come. We have to deal with our education system in the city. We have 15 school districts that have either parts or all of their school districts within the Kansas City city limits, but we're defined by one. We have some exceptional school districts in this town, and I think the efforts that are underway to deal with the Kansas City School District have got to be addressed. It has to be a we're all in this together issue so that we can continue to show the vitality of our urban neighborhoods, make investments so that people have lifestyle where they can make investments in over a career path as they move through, as they can start up with starter housing, move to other parts, and the school district should not be one of those areas that drive development patterns in the city, because I want more of those basement entrepreneurs that create, whether it's good beer, great coffee, or pharmaceuticals that have led to huge investments in the city. I want those investments taking place in our basements, in our neighborhoods around the city. I think we also have to change the perception of crime in this neighborhood, in the city. 90% of our violent crime, 90% of our murders take place in 13 square miles of the city. Kansas City is 320 square miles. So we've got a fairly focused area. We've got a fairly discrete problem. How do we address it? We've got to invest in technology. We've got to use modern resources. It's tough for us from a city perspective to hire additional police officers. Police officers are very expensive, but there are ways that we can use that using technology. You may have seen some of the stuff about license plate readers and speed cameras and traffic cameras. We use more benefit from the traffic cameras, the red light cameras now, from a crime prevention issue than from a ticket generation issue, simply because they're always there. We can back up. We can use those when we have activities. You're starting to see the use of more video cameras. And what I think is going to be an interesting conversation going forward is the use of drone technology and how do we use that in the city to deal with a crime issue as a way to monitor and provide security issues. So I think that'll be an interesting debate. I watched the debate in Lawrence a few weeks ago as that conversation took place. But I can see that technology being very applicable in Kansas City, Missouri, and I think as a community need to be able to prepare to address that security versus privacy issues as we go forward. But with our concentrated crime area, it's a perfect example of how you could use technology in a much more focused way to kind of stamp out, go after the bad guys and deal with some of our issues. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come and talk about what I think is a great opportunity for Kansas City to grow in the future. I'm very positive. I'm very bullish on Kansas City's future. I think we're headed in the right direction. We just kind of have to avoid being our own worst enemy. We have a tendency, I think, in the city to sit back and rest on our laurels. Other cities are continually trying to figure out ways to move the conversation forward. We have to find ways to bridge the gap. There's a great deal of camaraderie and collaboration amongst the cities in this region. I have never had a conversation where I'm in competition with Overland Park or Lenexa or Leawood for job creation. My competition is the state of Kansas, but locally it's, you know, we're not going to, I don't have to, I'm not battling incentives with my Kansas sister cities, and they're not battling incentives with Kansas City, Missouri. It's this issue of how do we marshal and how do we organize those state incentives in a way that allows the region to move forward. It's both a problem and a promise, I think. This metropolitan region is split roughly down the middle. There's 1 million folks on the Kansas side. There's 1 million folks on the Missouri side. And we can either make that a huge impediment to us or we can make that a huge asset that no other city in this country has, that potentially we have 4 U.S. Senators and a multitude of U.S. Congressional members that could be working for the region as a whole. So we have to be aggressive at trying to figure out ways to build the region while recognizing some of the fundamental issues that the state of Kansas has to deal with as they move forward. So it's in everybody's best interest that the region move forward, find creative ways. I'm a big fan of 100 new jobs come to Liberty. That's 100 new jobs that are coming to the region. They will be partaking of the city market. They will be going to concerts at the Sprint Center. They will be doing they will be shopping on the Country Club Plaza. They may be buying homes in Brookside or Waldo as they progress. So those are good jobs for the region. We have to be aggressive in trying to do that. And I'm a firm believer our greatest strength has always been our creativity of our people. And how do we continue to capitalize on the folks that are already here? Don't worry about what other people have that we'd like to have. What do we capitalize on that we've already got? Build a better future with that capacity. Unleash the creativity of our own folks in this. I run into a number of folks and they say, well, you know, I've just flown over Kansas City for too long. Had I known what was here, I'd have stopped. I wish I'd have gotten off the plane earlier. That's what we've got. We've got an untapped secret here that when people see this community, they see the whether it's the boulevards or the architecture or just the quality of the neighborhoods, they begin to realize just what an untapped talent treasure that we have that we need to continue to capitalize. I hosted a group of city managers from all over the country, and we spent all of our time on the east side of Kansas City, and they were like, you don't have urban blight problems. I said, well, we got urban blight problems. He goes, no, trust me, you don't have urban blight problems. With the quality of your housing stock, you've got urban strength issues that you've got to figure out a way to strengthen that capacity. And I think that's always good for us to realize to approach our city from other people's, see our city from other people's eyes, and you see what the strengths are, and how we can capitalize and stop being our own worst enemy. So. Thank you. I think we've got a tremendous path forward for the city. I'm very optimistic. Until they throw me out, I'm going to continue to be optimistic about Kansas City because I think this is the greatest opportunities lay both in our past and in our future, and how do we bridge those two together. So thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions, but keep doing what you're doing for Kansas City. And lastly, go Chiefs.
You're listening to City Manager Troy Schulte talking to us about taxes and development in the Kansas City area. This is the All Souls Forum on KKFI. We're going to take a break. We owe you a few messages. We'll come back and we'll hear the question and answer session.
This week's Heartland Labor Forum is about organizing, politics, and money. Here's the lineup. Eric Mann has a new book out called Playbook for Progressives, 16 Qualities of the Successful Organizer. This book is an organizing manifesto for the 21st century. And in the second half of our show, another Pioneer Women episode. We Go Political in an interview with Missouri Representative Gail McCann Beatty. And finally, it's Pledge Drive and your chance to support radio that talks back to the boss. Heartland Labor Forum, Thursday, 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Thank you for all that great information, and I was particularly pleased towards the end when you talked about avoiding being our own worst enemy. And I've been following the conversation about the airport terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And then lately, of course, we have the $75 million plus $800 million for whatever exactly that's supposed to produce. It seems to me there's a leadership issue that probably doesn't reside in the city manager's office, but I know you've been working on the charter recommissioning or effort. So I have a question around that effort, community engagement with the results of that effort, and how it might bear on these two particular rather substantial, you know, billion-dollar good ideas that somebody has in light of what you said. Is that...
Yeah, you know, I think the airport issue is one of... We are looking at whether it's $600 to $700 million, depending on the level of investment we need to just fix the existing system, the road infrastructure. I think it's timely for the city to have a conversation. Is $600 to $700 million to invest in the current design, or do we look at up to $1 billion to build a new modern system? One of the things that we have been dealing with was we have an airport that was really designed as TWA's world hub back in the late 60s. It's got 90 gates. The new terminal design that we're thinking of has about 40 gates. We're going to close terminal A this year, probably by December, which will have, then we'll still have 60 gates. We'll still have overbuilt infrastructure out at the airport. So we need to figure out a way to look at it logistically. How do we modernize? How do we operate a system? There's been a lot of, well, could we spend that money on at the airport? Could we spend that money fixing sewers or fixing roads or fixing schools? Unfortunately, you can't. That money at the airport has to stay at the airport. So the question is, what's the right approach? I'm not sure we've got a community consensus. We've got to spend some money out there. My approach has been, and I think through the airport commission, is how do we get the most bang for a buck? How do we get the conversation that moves forward? How could we make KCI more of an economic engine? City owns 10,000 acres out there. We need about 3,500 for flight operations. So that gives us about 6,500 acres that could be built up and developed as a job creator, as warehousing, distribution, transportation, logistics, as a significant employer. The TWA maintenance facility used to employ 5,000 people in the Northland. It was the primary employer in the Northland for decades. That's no longer there. So what do we need to do to continue to use the airport as an economic engine? I think that's part of the conversation that relates to all of the charter review issues, the police governance issue. How do we modernize local government? How do we make it more adaptable, more to change as needs change without being compounded by 1920 structures? One of my recommendations to the Charter Review Commission was just eliminate all charter requirements for city departments. Because in the past we used to have specific job titles and job responsibilities and departments actually called out in the city charter. Well, as times change and as service providers change, cities need to be able to adapt. The city has a health department because we were the first one in Jackson County to have recognize the need for public health. But now you're starting to see the blending environment where services and clinics are starting to be operated by the hospitals. So do we start to say, well, instead of having our own access, do we contract with hospitals for the provision of those services? So those are the types of issues that I think as we look at our charter review, as we look at the airport, do we have the necessary organizational structures in place that allow us to build for the future? The charter reform we did in 2005, 2006 was tremendously positive from a city operations standpoint, because I used to have charter requirements of who built sewer lines and who maintained sewer lines, which didn't have any relationship to how we actually operated as a city, but the charter said we have to do this, therefore we had to do this. So we were able to streamline our operations very greatly just by getting rid of some of those old charter mandates. So I think the charter has to be a living document to kind of work through these issues. That's why these reforms, I think, allow the kind of to frame the conversation as what do we want to be when we grow up, and are the structures in place now going to get us there, or are there better ways to get us there? I'm a firm believer that we need a new terminal just to deal with our security issues, to deal with our modernization issue. But I think that having that open, honest debate as a city is the right way to do it. We're not under any time crunch. We're not under a consent decree. We've got the luxury of time to think through these issues and how's the best way to approach it. And I think those conversations are important for the region to have and have everybody involved. It's also a regional issue. 60% of our customers at KCI come from Johnson County, Kansas. So this is a regional issue, and how do we tackle it? And is there a regional governance structure? Is there a regional funding structure that we need to look at? So those are the types of issues we need to look at, spend the time and effort to go through this, so it doesn't all fall on Kansas City, Missouri, to do all these stuff that drive the region forward. We'll be the beneficiaries, because they're not going to pick up the airport and move it someplace else. So that 6,500 acres of developable land, the benefits will accrue to Kansas City, Missouri. But how do we make sure that we don't have a situation where Johnson County 20 years from now decides they're going to put in commercial air service at New Century Air Center, which would bifurcate and weaken the air capacity of the region? Those are the types of issues I think we need to address through these initiatives and figure out what's the best way to do it. So that's a long, rambling answer, but I think that's one of that process of governance. It's never quicker. It's not quick, but I think in the long run, I think it will lead to the right answer for the city. And then, you know, what we end up with, I think everybody can then say, all right, how do we make the best of it? Ma'am.
I don't live in Kansas City. I live in St. Joseph. But I think you've done a wonderful job with the city market area, not just city market, but the other grocery stores and things that are around there, and the people, they're just delightful. And I brought a lot of people from St. Joe down the city market. But I'd also, in this recent income tax thing, I got in contact because my representatives are saying, oh, we're losing all this business to Kansas now. In St. Joe, we're certainly not losing any business to Kansas. But it was like, oh, Kansas City's going under. And I have to say that Mr. Cleaver's office was quite helpful for me. But also, you've been extremely helpful for me in combating some of that criticism, because I was afraid it was really going to hurt our schools and our university up there. And I think the main thing that Missouri has way over Kansas is our schools, and that we aren't going back to the 18th century in what we're going to teach our children.
Yeah, you look at when you ask businesses what drives their investment decisions, taxes are sixth or seventh or eighth on the list of stuff that makes decisions. Schools, workforce, transportation, infrastructure, those are the issues that make decisions for those investments. So there may be some nuggets of wisdom that come out of this Kansas tax reform, and I think it behooves us. This is where we can use that show-me mentality in Missouri to watch it, see if it works. And then if it does work, apply it. But don't race it. We have to compete. Kansas City is in no danger of slipping over into the abyss. We are a strong, vibrant city. Again, our own worst enemy may be ourselves and our expectations. So we just have to, you know, take the long-term view. This too shall pass. Sir.
My question is about agriculture. You mentioned how we're well positioned with regard to agriculture, with beef, corn, soy, and all that. But my question is the urban agriculture and local produce. We don't really produce a lot of the food that we eat. And my question concerning the municipal farm and the things that are going on there in the land bank, what's your big picture vision for Kansas City going into the future with creating more of the food that we eat?
Well, long term, I think there's some great opportunities for the municipal farm to kind of be a, and there's some good stuff that they've been perking. You know, it's interesting that the first development, significant commercial development we had on the riverfront was actually a greenhouse, which I think is, which kind of says something. You know, we've been thinking that was going to be kind of an office commercial center, and what you saw was, hey, this is a great look because of our proximity to the city market, that there's some opportunities for us to do this. I think the land bank also provides us a long-term tool. They shouldn't have created a land bank when they've got essentially a farmer as city manager, because he's never passed an opportunity to buy and hold land. It's the one thing they ain't making any more of. And so I think the land bank is a mechanism to put that in public control, to look at it. And, you know, we're having conversations now about turning lots over and turning them into fruit trees where they can become, you know, where we can plant trees in there. And some of the areas down by in the Leeds district that are probably, there's not a lot of development opportunities right now. So you could plant fruit trees and see if you can sell them to AWG and provide that market in those neighborhood, let neighborhoods have those gardens, because it's a better use of that land right now until development comes back in. I tell people, you may have heard this as I go around town, I'm a big fan of $5 gas, because I think $5 gas will do more for this city's than anything else that will do it, because when it gets to be expensive, when it gets to be really expensive to get to 155th and Flum or wherever that's at, it's just out there. I go out there for soccer, and I'm amazed. You know, it's like I keep looking for the mountains or a lake in Oklahoma. You know, I think once we do that, that sprawl will reverse, and then those assets, that land bank inventory, will become very, very beneficial long-term to the city. But, again, we've got to take a long-term view. So in the process, if we can plant fruit trees, or we can plant gardens and people could capitalize on, whether it's to feed their, just feed their neighborhood, or to teach kids how to do that stuff, eat right. I think that makes sense. I think there's some great stuff going on where they're starting to use the products coming out of that, those urban, gardens to start to, they're going to start selling them or giving them to schools. I think that's fantastic. I think we just got to continue to nourish that opportunity and let that land work for us. And then eventually, when the development opportunities are free, we're sitting there with land that we can just say, go and take it, you know. And if the worst thing we have to do is mow it for 15 to 20 years, we'll mow it. I can mow stuff. I enjoy that occasionally. I'll get out and mow a tractor on a Friday afternoon. And yeah, we can goats, whatever it takes.
Thank you for your presentation. To speak about taxes for a moment, in particular the TIF, which is tax incentive financing, I believe. Is there a philosophy regarding TIF financing? And if so, what is it? And if not, why not? And secondly, has ever any consideration ever been given to TIF financing for residential property?
I think we have refined our strategy on TIF over the years. I think early in the process, I think we were overly generous in our use of tax increment financing. I think we have learned to be very judicious with the use of that. We can get some of the same benefits with a property tax abatement or of a shorter duration. We were giving 25-year 100% tax abatements for a number of years. We didn't have to be that generous. Again, we have to balance those issues. I'm a big fan of using the tax increment financing approach to deal with public infrastructure issues. This is a nice way to rebuild that public infrastructure. I think we've got a much more judicious use of it. We're trying to figure out ways to make it shorter duration. Get in, make the investment, get out. You're starting to see some of those early TIF districts start to wind down. I think the city in the last couple of years has shut down five to eight various TIF districts around the city because they've accomplished what they set out to do. They've accomplished what they needed to do, so it was time to turn those dollars back over to the taxing jurisdictions. So I think we've kind of developed a strategy over time that says, you know, it's about like anything, it has to be used with balance and has to be used with reason. And I think you're starting to see more of an issue with, is there a way to tap into using tax increment financing to deal with our residential issues. You know, we did the big Cerner project was actually just using an existing TIF that had been created for the some of you may remember, we created that TIF when we were going after the Bass Pro Shop issue about 10 years ago. But that TIF stayed in place, hadn't been activated. But now as a component of that, I think there's $8 million of that money that will flow back into rebuilding the infrastructure in the neighborhoods around it, making it available for residential development. You're starting to see that up in the Northland, and as you look at that, what we've got is some restrictions about how we can use it, and the limitations of where we can use it. But I think there's a willingness to say, you know, the Glover plan, that Midtown redevelopment plan, has done phenomenal for making investments back into that Midtown region. And that Midtown region is defined anywhere from 25th to 47th Street, state line to Prospect. It's a huge area that the surplus off of that flows back into housing developments. It's financing some of our work in Beacon Hill. So I think we have to continue to do more of those opportunities. If we're going to use TIF, how do we broaden that, take the lessons learned from that Midtown project and use it to benefit just not only the project but the surrounding neighborhoods as well. And I think that's one of those lessons learned, but it took us a while to get there. Thank you.
You've been listening to Kansas City City Manager Troy Schulte talk about economic development, taxes, and such. Hope you've enjoyed it. Very informative. It's always nice to hear from our city officials, and it's always nice to be able to ask them questions, which is one of the things we do on the All Souls Forum. The program you heard tonight was recorded on Sunday, September 29th of 2013, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced for broadcast and edited by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls for their help in producing this program each week. Tune in again next Wednesday at 6 p.m. for another All Souls Forum right here on KKFI.